Well, I forgot to tell you that I work in an NGO. That's the logo there. It's gender equity, citizenships, work, and families. That's the whole name of the NGO. And well, we do a lot of work in activism, but we do research as well. Well, I will concentrate more on the incidence analysis than on direct taxes. But I will let you know at the beginning what's the Mexican context as a whole, and then we'll go to this incidence analysis with the results, simulations, policy recommendations, and challenges. Well, the countries that Pinaki already told us, and financed, well, the Mexican population, from 2000 to 2006, the population grew by 7.4%, and we are a total of 105.2 million people in 2006. And 52 of that population is female population. And I hope you can see this chart, because it's the economically active population in Mexico. And we have the first row, it says the total population, it's 52 women and 48% men. If we read it that side, we had the 100% population, and we read it this side, we had the comparison with women's only or men's only. So we have almost the same of population from 14 years old and over. And those that work in the economically active population, 14 years old and older, are 37.5 women and 62.5 men. So we have almost the double in men. Women represent 37.5 of the economically active population. Among women 40 years of age and older, only 41 identify as part of this economically active population. And this is for you to know that we have very low minimum wage in Mexico, only 48 pesos. In that time, it was like pesos a day. It was like $5 a day. And it's very important, because when we see who pays taxes, it depends on the minimum wage a lot. So I just want you to remember that part. And if we want to see the level and to see the terrible unequal income distribution in Mexico, we can see this disaggregated by sex. So we have the first row, it's until one minimum wage, and we have 17% of women working earn one minimum wage, and 10% men. And the second is one and two minimum wages, from one to two minimum wages, and it's 23 women and 18% of men. Until three, that's where the paying taxes is going to be important, 19% and 23% of men. And there is this one row that said there is no income. They work in the economically active population, but they don't earn any money at all. And that's 10% of women and 7% of men. A lot of women or partners in the families that they work a lot, but they don't get any income. The income, it goes directly to the head of the household. Yeah, family business mainly. Yes, it could be for markets, yes. But if they don't, it's, for example, it's the husband who is in charge, But he says, okay, I'll go and stay a little bit out. You take care of that, you know, half of the time or in the afternoons or something like that. And then you see that they are working, even if not formally working in a sense, because the husband is the one who has the accountability and everything. Yeah. Yes, it's formally. Well, these are all formal and informal because this one comes from the survey on employment, national employment. So people answers even if they are formal or informal. They are both, but they could be in the formal as well. And if we add those that do not earn any income, that 7%, 10% women and 7% men, to those that earn less than one minimum wage and up to three minimum wages, we found that they represent 64% of the total economically active population and 71.8% of women that are economically active fall into this category. And this is very important because when we do the arrangements for direct taxation, personal income tax, people who earn until three minimum wages do not pay taxes. So it's very important to know, do not pay direct taxes. That in Mexico only, let's say 36% of population, of economically active population is paying direct taxes. And then in Mexico, we have this huge dilemma that it lacks of sufficient financial resources and we require a lot of resources to end in inequitable distribution of existing income. You know, this is very, very important in Mexico. We do need a lot of resources and we have very scared. I don't have the chart with me at the moment, but we depend a lot on the petroleum resources, and I will let you know that it's in the afternoon sessions. In the other session is that. In Mexico, we did not find any explicit gender bias as Corina found in Argentina. We have tax filling is carried out individually and without distinction between women and men. And we have a huge law that it's so many pages and that it's quite, take cares a lot of not being discriminatory. We have progressive tariffs and we have exemptions and we have deductions and we have salary credit. You know, the exemptions and non-salary earnings for those who make less than the minimum wage, compensations for overtime, reimbursement for medical and funeral expenses, social security payments, those are exemptions. And we have deductions that are discounts and bonus once base revenue has been taxed, goods, raw materials, and all those. And we have this salary credit that it's important when we see this chart because this is the differences in rates for monthly income tax in 2001 and 2006. As you can see, brackets are being diminished. You know, we have less brackets in 2006, and it's not only brackets that diminished, but the rates went down as well. For administrative simplification of taxes, we are coming from having 40% over the excess of the lower bracket limit to pay 40% rate. We moved to 29% rate. So we are paying much less taxes, direct taxes, and we are considering the same people who earn this huge amount that is over in this corner, 212,000 pesos onwards. People who earn that huge amount now pays the same as the one who earns 8,000 pesos. No, it's really, really very inequitable, that that rate in Mexico, and it's becoming some trying to simplify, but it's only 29% at the moment. You know, that wage, for example, is let's say a primary teacher, you know, something who earns like a primary teacher, to the same that earns the richest man in Mexico. So it's you know, the same rate, that's inequitable. And it's important because, as I told you about this wage credit, even if it says that it should be paying with a minimum wage, that is the first row, that comes with a wage credit that is something that goes, so actually, as a fact, they don't pay until we arrive to the three minimum wages, you know, because there is something that the government gives them, because every time is getting the minimum wage not enough for very poor people. From 2001 to 2006, the number of brackets was reduced, in the applied rate were reduced. Taxes were imposed in 2006 at a rate of 29% on income from 8,600 pesos and above. Now we'll go to the indirect study on taxes. We have, as India and as Argentina, value-added tax, a special tax on production and services, that the excise tax on gasoline and diesel fuel, and on alcoholic beverages, soft drinks, and tobacco. And here is the VAT. We have this general rate of 15%. Exceptions are medical services, educational services, not-for-profit activities, sport and cultural services, books and magazines, overland passenger transportation, lottery, and residential land and building. And zero-rated exports, foods, medicines, milk, potable water, non-processed animals, fishery and agricultural service, and wholesale trade of gold and jewelry. And we have a preferential rate in the border. That's 10%. That's kind of crazy, because all the states in the border of the United States pay just 10%, and in the south as well. So something that it's coming and without reviewing or something like that. And for instance, we identify how much indirect taxes each group of people pay in proportion to their income.
Could you tell a bit about residential
land and building taxes, like I live in a place and I pay the rent to the landlord and then he or she doesn't pay tax?
No, I think it's for peasants
who live in the same land where they work or something like that. And buildings, I actually don't know exactly what it means. I let you know, I'll check. So this exercise is going to be different to ones on Pinaki and the one in Corina as well. I am going to consider income instead of expenditure. This is different because in Mexico we do have data for both. We do have expenditure data and we have income data. So I'm only going to present you the incidence on income. And we have the National Household Income and Expenditure Survey, that's 2006, and variables used were expenditure, population, households, income. We did the analysis in those two parts, the expenditure incidence, like Pinaki and Corina presented, taxes paid as part of the total expenses, but I will present only income incidence, that is the taxes paid as part of total income. And in here, maybe you cannot see it, but in the first part of the chart are the amounts that we get from VIT first, it's a special production and services, that is tobacco and beverages, and the last one, gasoline, and then the total. And as you can see, we can have some negative amounts in these 2 years. Well, in Mexico, when the prices of oil go up, there is a subsidy. So instead of having a tax, we have a subsidy. And that makes something very, very crazy, because that subsidy means the same that we earn for tobacco and drinking at the same time. So in one side, we are giving them, and in the other, we are reaching it. So it's kind of crazy. We are already working on this not a subsidy for gasoline, because it makes ecologically and in a lot of economical ways not worth it to have this subsidy. And since 2009, this year, we start trying to cut that subsidy. But the one who determines the way the VIT shape takes, obviously, it's VIT. If we see the year 2005, that's more or less the amount we figure. 80% we collect from VAT, only 9.4% from tobacco and alcohol, and just a few from this gasoline. We classified household as they did in head of household, occupational status, household composition, and we did add an extra classification that is called income generation. We classified male maintained household and women maintained household. Since we have enough information in Mexico, we could make this extra classification that give us more information about who is taking the decision. We think that if women are the head of households and they maintain those households, they have more space to take decisions on the money. So we thought that was a classification that could make more sense, let's say. So we have this classification that is, if the income earned at the inside the household was earned by women, that's a women maintained home, and 60% by men, it's a male maintained home. And then we have dual maintained households when no one earns more than 40 to 60, so more or less the same. And we divided by urban and rural households and by households with and without dependents. This chart is very important. We have the four classifications in here, and we can see the percentages of households that have, for example, head, it's 75% male-headed households and 25% women-headed households. And in labor occupational status, 30% male breadwinner, 13% women breadwinner, 39% double breadwinners. So this destroys a lot the assumption of the male breadwinner only. And in the house composition, more men inside, 34, more women, 39. And in income generation, we have 62% of male maintained households, 25% of women maintained household, and 12% of dual maintained household. And I'm going to show you this is the first incidence on total indirect taxes by household. The first, we'll see the blue line, it tells us that in the first, this is a male, female, both, and none. And so in the if we see only that blue line, it says from occupational status. So the incidence for a male breadwinner households and women household is almost the same, as we can see. It's almost the same. And when both have the incident comes down, and then when no one is working, we have it up. It's very strange. And we had a green line. We have almost the same, a little bit higher for male-headed household than female-headed household, but it's almost the same. And the red line is the number of people inside a house. So if we have a male majority, those have a higher incidence than the female majority households. And almost the same that when there is the same number. And that shape is the one that took our study when we did on the expenditure side. You know, it's almost the same, higher expenditure, incidence on expenditure for male headcount. But when we have this new classification, we got the opposite. You know, when women maintain their homes, they do have a higher incidence. That's the yellow line. This is women's higher incidence. And why is that? Well, we have our hypothesis that it's maybe because as women decide how much to earn, they have to buy everything that is needed. So the pattern of consumption and expenditure is quite the whole of the family. And since they have mostly not very large money to expend, the expenditure and the income is quite close. But that's why we have this opposite result. Total incident for indirect taxes classified by income generation is higher for majority female households. That one, that yellow that I was telling you. And if we have income incidence and by quintiles, dotted lines are without dependents, and the male is the one with the square, and female are the one with the rhombo. And both breadwinners, it's with a circle. So we can see that for male male income earners household, male maintained homes, there is the highest incidence in the first quintile. And besides that, the female, that's the second line, with and without dependent, are in the first quintile who have the higher incidence. You know, it's that it goes for everything. It goes like this, always in the higher incidence. Majority female households have greater incidence with the exception of male-headed household without dependents in the first quintile. And high incidence in the first quintile for all classification is notable. You know, always poor, the poor have the highest incidence, you know, progressivity. In the classification by income generation, the incidence is regressive, very notable in the first two quintiles, and for the last three, a stable situation. So we have much higher incidence in the first two quintiles, and then it goes quite the same for the third, fourth, and fifth. And when we see, when we compare rural versus urban incidence, in the first, in the upper chart, it goes the incidence for total taxes, and we have the same shape as the one that I showed you in the beginning, and the dotted lines are the rural areas. In all cases, rural pays have less incidence than urban households. In all cases, in the total, all cases, you know, if we have a male header or if we have occupational status, everything is the same shape, but with different differences. But when we see this special tax that on tobacco and alcohol, we do see that rural pay more in all different classifications. That's the lower one. For rural and taxation on alcoholic and beverages and tobacco is higher. It's the only one that is higher. The pattern is repeated. I'm going to go to the simulation so I can show you. As I already told you, Mexico, we do not have taxes on food. Actually, the only food that we tax is yogurt. We don't know why, but we tax yogurt. And we have three simulations, non-basic food, because we don't tax lobster or very meats or fishes or cheeses. No, everything is without taxes, zero taxes, actually. And the first simulation was for non-basic food products and confectionery products. The second for non-basic food products, confectionery, and medicines. And the third is the one that we did the opposite that Pinaki did. We now put the tax instead of taking it out. Actually, this is a very important discussion that in Mexico, if we are going to tax basic food and medicines. It's going to start right after elections that we are going to have on Sunday. On Monday, we will start this discussion again, hopefully. Here we have the amount of money that we could get if we tax those products. I will quickly tell you that with the taxing non-basic food and sugar products, we increase our amount of resources collected by 23.9%. And if we tax those non-basic food plus medicines, we got that 30%. And if we tax non-basic food, medicines, and basic basket, we have almost 50% more of income revenue for the government. And so we have the same shapes, you know, the same that I told you at the beginning, the same shapes only goes up and up depending on the first simulation, the second, and the third, you know. So it's the absolute incidence increases, but the distribution is similar to that at the beginning. We all have the same shape. But in here, we do have differences. The green line is women's. We are considering the classification as income generating. You know, household women maintain is the green one. Actually, it's the one that is always in the with the higher incidence. And the second is male, and the third is both. So in here we can see that we have very, very different differences. It becomes more regressive, and there is a disproportionate effect in the first quintile. Incidence is duplicated. Actually, women pay the double of their income on taxes. And the dispersion between the majority female household and the rest is increased, you know. and the effect decrease of direct quintiles in the field, well, that's not important policy recommendations. The incorporate a gender perspective in the design of tax policy for direct and indirect taxes, at least to reflect on this. Need for more research on the relationship between labor market, expenditure and consumption patterns, time use and tax system, you know? That's that's something. And to impose direct taxes, progressive, you know, that are progressive, we think, we recommend actually to the government to do it in the direct taxes, you know, to tax rich people. Only increase indirect taxes on luxury goods, let's say like lobster. And the challenge we have to obtain information on individuals' consumption and expenditure. We couldn't find any. To reduce taxes for all women or only those that have dependents, it's a dilemma between collection and redistribution. Actually, I'm missing some words there. Is this, since we have only 28% of women in the economically active population, that we are just a few, and that's smaller as well, who pay taxes, if we do some child allowances or something in there, it's not going to benefit the poor woman. It's just going to benefit the women who earn enough money to pay taxes. And the other challenge is, are we going to resolve the problem of gender inequities with public expenditure or with taxation? That's all. Thank you.